What is life?
The definition of life is a floating, moving target.
Is life more than just this physical existence?
Is it worth it to extend my life, just a life?
What does it mean to really be pro-life?
I came that they may have life and have it abundantly.
Hello and welcome to Life Right Now Radio. I'm Rebecca Maxwell, happy to have you along the journey with us on this show where we look to find new ways to live out our pro-life in the everyday, to take it beyond just being a slogan or kind of that bumper sticker that we wear on ourselves, or maybe a Facebook conversation or something, which you can, of course, follow us on Facebook, Life Right Now Radio. Everybody has a Facebook page and we'd love it if you'd like us there. But it's got to be something that we actually live out, right? We want to bear fruit in our lives of the conviction that we have. And that's what we're all about here on the show. How do we take it to the practical? We could talk theoretically. Sure, that's good. We need to know why we believe what we believe and why the other side believes what they believe. And the logical outgrowths of that, we'll look at some of that today, as a matter of fact. But then it's about what that looks like. How do we call, for example, for consistency? We live in a world that is fairly schizophrenic when it comes to valuing life. Everybody loves babies, sometimes. Everybody loves the promise of new life when it's their new life. But what about extending that to other people? I mean, the inconsistencies and really the hypocrisy is unpalatable to most folks, especially people from my generation, because we have a very highly trained hypocrisy radar. That's one thing that we can root out pretty well. We don't like to see that. And really no one wants to be inconsistent. There is no middle ground between life and death. It's a simple dichotomy. Until, of course, politics gets involved. Politics making the simplest of things extra complicated since the beginning of time. But we have to address it. Wherever we see these inconsistencies on our own side, on the other side of this argument over whether or not all people deserve the rights of people, because our culture is watching, we're listening, and we're learning from what we see, especially what we see from leaders. And there's a leader in our state who we think needs a bit of a consistency check, an elected official who, on one hand, is striving to make Iowa the safest place in the nation to have a baby. That's her stated goal. She is also on camera praying to God for the blessing of abortion. One of these things is not like the other. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that along with our friend Tim Overland here in just a moment. Also, a great story from the fine state of Florida that proves that pregnancy centers and the work that our friends in that particular ministry are doing makes a life-saving difference. And in this case, they saved not one, not two, but three lives at a time. You're going to want to hear this. And before we end the show, you will hear a message that every single person living today on this earth needs to hear. I'm going to do my part. We're going to share it from perhaps a bit of an unlikely source, a name you might not know, a face I bet you do know. A Hollywood actor shares what I think is really the heart of God. And it's specifically a message to post-abortive families, women and men that have had abortions, that need forgiveness and need to know that there is hope. And I'm going to issue you the Kleenex warning right now. All coming up on Life Right Now today. Right here at the top of the show, we are passing an anniversary today as an American people. And it's one that most folks would rather forget about. In fact, people would prefer you didn't even know about or ever think about. But 1 year ago this week, And I remember it because we did a lot of broadcasting on the atrocity at the time. But 1 year ago this week, a mass murderer was convicted for his crimes. You may know him as Kermit Gosnell. And it was 1 year ago this week that the nation's eyes were really opened to the sheer depth of the evil that we've been sanctioning and sanitizing and supporting every single day, every day of my lifetime. Now, as a result of the trial of Kermit Gosnell, which was reluctantly covered in the media, lots of great work done in the alternative media as well. You probably saw more about it on the internet than you did on TV, but eventually there was some television coverage. We now know the pain, the gruesomeness of abortion, of what goes on inside those clinics that we might walk past or that we might stop and say a prayer for, that we subsidize. And as much as we want to look away and ignore the ugly and uncomfortable truth, the legacy of the Gosnell murders demand a reaction. And that's why I think it's important to remember precisely what happened. There at his clinic at 3801 Lancaster in Pennsylvania, which if you haven't seen the documentary called 3801 Lancaster, take some time when you're feeling strong, when you're feeling up to it, and because it is graphic, but it is well done. But you don't have to look that far, because it goes on down your street, in your neighborhood, in your state, all across the country, and all across the world today. This type of crime continues to exist, and we continue not only to look the other way, but to cover for this practice that is killing children. Repeat, it is not a simple medical procedure, a choice. It is the killing of children. And it's also the harming, and in this case, the killing of the mothers as well, of the women that go to a so-called doctor for help, and he took their life instead. And we can go through the facts as brutal as they are about the millions of dollars that Kermit Gosnell made by preying on the weak, on the vulnerable, on minority women, on immigrants, poor women who felt like they couldn't afford a child, and yet he would charge them up to $3,000 to have an abortion. But some could say that I am biased, right? You're a pro-life activist. You're just going to make it sound way worse than it is anyway. I mean, I don't know that there is a light and fluffy way to, you know, sanitize the murder of women and children by the thousands at this man's hands. But okay, how about we listen to a far less biased and far more substantial testimony? How about the record of the trial? How about the report of the grand jury on Gosnell's crime? On the record, what really happened, just the facts. I'm going to warn you that they are hard to hear.
Over the years, there were hundreds of snippings. Most of these acts cannot be prosecuted, because Gosnell destroyed the files. Among the relatively few cases that could be specifically documented, one was baby boy A. His 17-year-old mother was almost 30 weeks pregnant, 7.5 months, when labor was induced. An employee estimated his birth weight as approaching 6 pounds. He was breathing and moving when Dr. Gosnell severed his spine and put the body in a plastic shoebox for disposal. The doctor joked that this baby was so big he could walk me to the bus stop. Another baby, baby boy B, whose body was found at the clinic, frozen in a 1 gallon spring water bottle, was at least 28 weeks of gestational age when he was killed. Baby C was moving and breathing for 20 minutes before an assistant came in and cut the spinal cord, just the way she had seen Gosnell do it so many times. And these were not even the worst cases. Gosnell made little effort to hide his illegal abortion practice. But there were some, the really big ones, that even he was afraid to perform in front of others. These abortions were scheduled for Sundays, a day when the clinic was closed and none of the regular employees were present. Only one person was allowed to assist with these special cases, Gosnell's wife. The files for these patients, who were not kept at the office, Gosnell took them home with him and disposed of them. We may never know the details of these cases. We do know, however, that during the rest of the week, Gosnell routinely aborted and killed babies in the 6th and 7th month of pregnancy. The Sunday babies must have been bigger still.
That's an excerpt from the grand jury transcript at Kermit Gosnell's trial. And the voice you heard there was Anne McElhenney, who is the producer of the up-and-coming Gosnell movie, which some of you may have heard about, may even have read about on our Facebook page, for example, where we've promoted that they want to tell the story of Kermit Gosnell. Independently produced, because he is America's biggest serial killer, right? That's the angle that they're taking. And they are willing to tell the story from specifically from the documentation that came out in the trial, from those reports, because it's not about it's not a matter of opinion. It's not something that can be twisted and turned. The fact is that pregnant women, moms, in a parade line of pain and exploitation, habitually entered Kermit Gosnell's clinic, and many of them never walked out again. They were killed at his hands. Now, why wouldn't the media want to tell that story? Why wouldn't we look that full in the face for the evil that it is and say, no, we won't tolerate that. No, not gonna happen. Not in this country, not in the light of day, not with our money, not with our support. No, not tolerable. It is a crime. It is evil. And it will not happen here. Why won't we do that? Why instead will we turn away, just pretend we never heard the story of Kermit Gosnell, pretend we never heard about his victims, about the millions of dollars in blood money that he has made, and the billions that the industry makes across the nation, and that those who claim to be our leaders, from the White House to the State House, and unfortunately, sometimes even from our pulpits, refuse to stand up and stop. That's why we need to remember the facts, remember the people that Kermit Gosnell killed. Because it's not just him. And it's not just then. It is not over. It is every day. And in the words of the great English abolitionist, William Wilberforce, we can choose to look the other way. But we can never again say that we did not know. And in my words, now that we know, what are we going to do about it? It's something that we need to stop. And it starts by standing up and calling for integrity, for consistency in our culture at large, and especially in our elected officials. We're going to talk about that and how some of that is playing out right now in our own backyard with our friend Tim Overland when we come back. You're listening to Life Right Now Radio.
pro-life, what is it? Is it merely to believe that every human being, every single human being has dignity and an incalculable value? What does it mean to really be pro-life? Is it a state of mind? Is it merely being brought to tears at the thought of an innocent child being disposed of, like damaged property? What does it mean to be pro-life? Is it a commitment to activism? Is it merely going outside an abortionist's office, praying and providing counseling to young women? What does it mean to be pro-life? Is it a political question? Is it merely voting for the right candidate, picking the right judge, voting for the right party? Is it a religious question? Is it merely going to church, worshiping the Lord, praying for aid and comfort for the needy? Is it a moral question? Is it merely to do what is right, to do what is written on our hearts and do it now? Is it a scientific question? Is it only about our understanding of human physiology, facts, and figures? What does it mean to be pro-life? Truly pro-life? To be pro-life means all of these things, and more. To be pro-life is not to give up, not lower our standards, and not settle for the protection of just some. Not be afraid of defeat, of the future, of death. To be pro-life means to live for others, and get off the couch right now to bring the church to the streets, bring the streets to the polling place, and bring healing to our world. What does it mean to be pro-life today? Well, I can sum that up for you in just one word.
Personhood, fighting for the value and dignity of every human life. Visit personhoodusa.com. And welcome back to Life Right Now Radio, show where we work on new ways to live out our pro-life. And part of living that out means consistency. I know that you've heard the arguments we all have that pro-lifers aren't really pro-life because we only care about certain children, or we only care about the children and not the mother, or we're only pro-birth and not pro-life. And of course, we tackle that here on the show. That is a lie. I understand how people could sometimes get that impression. I'll put it that way. So just for the benefit of the doubt, but every single week we highlight all the ministries, all the great folks that are working and how you can work to just show how untrue that really is, that we really do care about everybody involved in this whole fight, about the mothers, the fathers, the babies, the grandparents, everyone involved, because that's what life is about. And it means we have to be consistent. Our culture likes to tackle inconsistencies, especially when it comes to pro-lifers, for example. But what about the other side? There's quite a bit of logical inconsistency going on, especially as we discovered this week in our own backyard. One instance in particular caught the eye of our very own Tim Overlin, and he wrote a fascinating piece about it that is up on our website, liferightnow.net, and he is on the line, conveniently enough, to speak with us about it. Hello there, Tim.
Hello. Fascinating. Wow. Holy cow. We got the bar set high.
Oh, I'm sure you can handle it. You are an expert on your own opinion.
Right.
But this is an interesting case of, I think, inconsistency, or as we say on the show sometimes, schizophrenia, cultural schizophrenia that's going on here in Iowa from a pretty public official. You want to talk about lay the background for us a bit?
Absolutely. So I was dutifully sitting in my office this week working on just some different things, you know, website, that kind of stuff, and had one of our local news stations on in the background, and heard a story about an organization called Count the Kicks. That didn't grab my attention enough until they started talking about how it was saving babies, which, as you might guess, would grab my attention.
Exactly, yeah.
I tuned my ears back in, went and found the news story online, and wow, this is great. And you know, this is phenomenal. I didn't know this was a thing, really. I will tell you, in our family, when I was a kid, I mean, really, really young, you know, we had, I had a sister that was stillborn. I mean, she was full term, had the umbilical cord wrapped around her neck. Mm. And, you know, I've had some other issues. I've got four brothers, but four living brothers, I guess, is the way to say it, and would have had three others as well as a sister. So so when you start hearing about, and I kind of heard the story about this is the way to save babies, you know, that so they're not stillborn. Mm-hmm. That caught my attention for right. obvious reasons,
sure.
the things we talk about consistently, but also because of some family history.
Right. And who wouldn't want that? I mean, as you say in the article, and you do link, if people are interested in their mission at Count the Kicks, from what I understand, it's an app that helps moms to be keep track of their baby's movement in utero, and that can help you let you know if there are signs of any health problems or developmental issues going on there. And that's a good thing. Anything that helps us to improve the chances of children surviving to be born into this world, that's what we want. Totally on board with that.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, and yeah, what the app does is especially in the third trimester, what it does is helps mom count kicks and as the app is titled, and movements and those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I guess and this plays out with my sister. My mom always said she knew when she was having a boy because we were lazy, and the girls were much more active. So that was something that, like I said, kind of jumped out at me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So when we're hearing about this, which sounds like a really good idea, still sounds like a great idea, yet where does the schizophrenia come in? How did you note that there was, you know, maybe more to this than meets the eye?
Well, I heard in the news story, I heard a name that sort of rang a bell. It didn't click right away. It's a fairly common name, so I didn't think that much of it, but I was curious. That name was Janet Peterson. So I went online, kind of jumped on their Facebook page, jumped on the website, and went looking, you know, for some more background. Again, we're always looking for guests, so mm-hmm. I thought that would be good. But then was kind of poking around and found out that Janet Peterson, in fact, is my very own state senator, who has a little bit of history in the life issue in general. I started, as I was doing my research on this organization, watched the video, Janet, heartbreaking story, 11 years ago, very similar issue to my mom, where, she, you know, she had her daughter who was stillborn because of an umbilical issue.
Mm-hmm.
So just devastating, you know, and so her and four other ladies took this heartbreaking situation and turned it into this app, and I guess they're getting a lot of national publicity. And go find the story. If you go find the piece that I wrote, I've linked the story about these women from the Huffington Post. They've got a video on their website or Facebook page. Just really good stuff and compelling mm-hmm. stuff, but you know, it just kept bothering me, and I finally remembered why. You know, Senator Peterson made some news, was it late last year, midsummer, late last year, maybe, with some activities at the Capitol.
Remind our audience of what it is that you're talking about. And just as, you know, again, we support, I would think, the mission of ministries or any type of outreach that wants to help the unborn child come into this world. Absolutely. Count the Kicks sounds like an awesome thing. But when one of your spokespeople is advocating for I guess only for life when it's wanted life, then we might have a bit of a problem in terms of consistency of message, right? And that's
right.
what we're talking about with Senator Peterson.
Yeah, and so the specific issue that I'm talking about is, again, I don't remember the exact date, but there was an event in the rotunda of the Iowa State Capitol where an activist was, it's weird to say it this way, but it's the only way you can say it, was praying to God, and I'm using air quotes there, that, you know, for abortionists and for that abortion continued and not praying for abortionists and that it would end, you know, like we do. But there's a 5-minute video. Again, I referenced it in here. I didn't put anything up here that I didn't thoroughly reference. And, you know, she's praying to God and all of these things about how such a blessing abortion is. And right there in the background is, right next also to my state representative, I think I might need to move, is Senator Peterson. And then a couple of, at that time, there were still two governor candidates for the governor with their heads bowed, mm-hmm. praying. And not to mention they got up in front of the mic and made some comments that were, you know, right in line with this prayer. So it's just, I was floored. I mean, I was just like, wait a minute. How does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, Mrs. Peterson, I mean, they named their baby. I mean, you know, they're talking about this child in all the ways that we talk about our children. And then to have this Sybil situation of, mm-hmm. of that exact same, you know, the exact opposite of what you would expect. And it just, it floored me. I mean, I just, as you said, the schizophrenia moment of that was just, I had to write something out. And as I started writing it, you know, and kept writing and you know, mm-hmm. This is my first opinion piece outside of a status on Facebook. So, you know, I mean, I tried to spend a lot of time on it, was really nervous about posting it. But I mean, it just felt like, you know, as you have said multiple times, we applaud this organization, but how I think you have to call that hypocrisy when it's that blatant.
Right. And I think when one of the things that you highlighted in your piece, which is up at liferightnow.net, people should go and check it out because I think it's good. You're welcome. But Ms. Peterson said back in 2004 that she had a goal of making Iowa the safest place in the nation to have a baby after she lost her daughter. And again, that sounds really good. It sounds like something we can all agree with. But to then, for those words to come out of the mouth of a mom who has lost her child and understands the impact that that one unborn life had on her, and how strongly she feels the absence of her daughter's life, of Grace's life, to then support abortion to such an extent that she's publicly praying in the middle of our state capitol that God would bless the abortion industry. That you can't really call that anything but inconsistency. And I don't think, and you know, I'll allow you to, you know, expand on your motivations if this isn't true, but I think I can speak for you to say that we're not trying to get Senator Peterson to stop her work with Count the Kicks or with the stillbirth registry. I mean, all of that, I think, dignifies the unborn life and dignifies people as they ought to be respected. And we respect all of those efforts immensely. But we're just asking her to, I guess, straighten out these logical loops that she's got going on, so that we understand that we're talking about people, that if it's a person, if Grace, her unborn or her stillborn daughter, sadly taken from us due to medical issues, that if Grace's absence matters to her and her family, then every unborn life that is taken from us matters in this world, too, just as much.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, I've had some contact with some folks, and I've said we would absolutely love to have that organization on our show. I mean, that would be mm-hmm. somebody that, you know, would be right up our alley in what we, part of our mission. You know, this is a way to you know, to value life and to defend life. And so that would be, you know, I would love for her to continue to do that. You know, I say at the end of my piece, you know, I'm still a registered Republican, but in that capacity or outside of that capacity, you know, I would put up signs. It probably would confuse my neighbors, but I would put her signs in my yard if she was consistent on this issue, because I think it is the number one issue. Mm-hmm. And if she was consistent, and if what she so passionately, the work she so passionately does, and the things that she has done to honor her daughter was consistent, you know, I would be her biggest cheerleader. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I live in her district. My phone number is not tough to find. It's right on our website. You know, I would love for Senator Peterson or any one of the people involved with this organization, please call me. I would love to sit down and talk with you about it. If you'd be willing, I'm sure Rebecca can make time for you to come on the show.
Absolutely. And it because it's not a political thing. This is a principles thing. It's a people thing.
Absolutely.
And I think that if anything, your piece goes to highlight that we have to be consistent. And it's also a call for pro-lifers to be consistent as well. This goes across the board. If we talk about valuing, we can't talk about valuing some lives and not value every single life. And I hope that Senator Peterson, maybe we'll get to talk with her here shortly. We can certainly reach out to her. But it does matter. If we say that one life doesn't matter or is inconvenient and therefore we're not going to worry about it, we can just dispose of that person, then, I mean, everything else that we believe has basically been called into question. If we devalue one life, then we have shaken the foundation of the value of every life. And I think logically we understand that. But when we delve into politics, suddenly this simple truth gets all complicated and twisted around. I don't think it needs to be that complicated. And I don't think that Senator Peterson, if you're willing to come on the show, we'd be happy to talk it out with you and see if we can come to a point of agreement on this.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I've had some people say that I politicized this wonderful organization. And that was, I went out of my way to not do that. You know, I'm not above jumping into a political discussion, but, you know, I did everything I could to not politicize it. The only reference I made was that, you know, was trying to illustrate the point that I don't care what party she is. You know, it's please be consistent. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm, you know, this show is all about us being the hands and feet for these ministries. So we believe that each and every one of us have a calling and potential to do a lot of great things in this area. But, you know, Senator Peterson has an even greater responsibility, in my opinion, mm-hmm. from with her position and the position she's been entrusted with. And to she's even, in my mind, would be more called to be consistent, especially on this issue. You know, we talk a lot about that this is the issue that is going to define, you know, our time. And to be put in a position of power and to be able to do things for life and to stand up for life, I think she has even more responsibility because of that.
Tim Overland, author of our Having Our Cake, Except When It's Inconvenient, on liferightnow.net. Check out his piece and see the facts that's causing, I guess, a bit of a controversy, although I'm not sure exactly why. It's a call for consistency from one of our own senators here in the state of Iowa, and it's also a good reminder that all of us need to be consistent when we are talking about the fight for life. We can't pick and choose. Every life matters. Thank you, sir, for making time for us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rebecca.
Bye-bye. Check out Tim's article on liferightnow.net, liferightnow.net. Having Our Cake, Except When It's Inconvenient is the title. And I think we all need to be striving for consistency in this area, especially those of us and especially those of our leaders who say that with their mouth that they are pro-life. Now, people that say, yes, we want to care about babies. We want to value babies, moms, make it a safe place here in the state of Iowa. I mean, I think most people would say, yes, that's absolutely what we want to do. That means it has to be safe for everybody, for every person. No person should be deprived of their rights. Those rights are not contingent on whether or not a person fits certain criteria, whether or not they're convenient, whether or not they are wanted, because they have the right to be here outside of what the world says our population needs, what's good for the collective. We believe that every individual is created in the image of God, and that every individual does have the right, the God-given and inalienable right to life. But it's easy to make excuses. It's easy to justify, especially in our culture now. We say abortion is normal. In fact, abortion is preferable in certain cases, especially when moms are older, when they are poor, when maybe they can't afford to have a child right now. So we ought to just get rid of those kids. They won't have a good life anyway. They might have health problems and you can't handle it. It's certainly the farthest thing from planned and convenient. Well, I think there's one happy mom today. She knows from firsthand experience the blessing of an unplanned pregnancy, and now she has not one, not two, but three little bundles of joy. And we'll talk about that here when we come back. You're listening to Life Right Now Radio.
The first birthday I remember, I was four. Maybe my third. I don't remember my third. Or my second. No, don't remember my second birthday. Not my first either. My first, no way. But my mom does. When she saw this, and knew it was me. She knew it was me. And not a piece of tissue. Or a blob of matter. She knew I was alive. She decided not to abort me. She didn't believe the lie. Didn't believe it.
The lie.
The lie that I wasn't alive yet.
Wasn't alive yet.
Thanks, Mom, for choosing life. Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom.
For choosing life.
Hey, Mom, thanks a lot.
Welcome back to Life Right Now Radio, the show where we look at new ways to live out our pro-life, and we believe very strongly. Oh, I'm Rebecca Maxwell, by the way. Hi. We believe very strongly in the promise, in the potential, and in the mission of pregnancy centers and ministries that reach out to women right at the time of their unplanned pregnancy. That is largely where the rubber meets the road in our culture when it comes to valuing life. I mean, that's one of the spots where you want to see the choice between life and death. That is literally what happens every single day. And the fine folks at pregnancy centers across this nation and across the world as well, and in our own backyard, where you hear these amazing life-saving stories. And I know it's difficult to work day in and day out, and I think sometimes we probably wonder, does it really make a difference? Well, I read this story, and the first thing I thought was, wow, you guys really do make a difference. You do. And in this specific story, you changed a life, and you saved not one, not two, but three other lives as well. a lady named Sharon Lewis went to, in Miami, Florida, went to Heartbeat of Miami Pregnancy Help, a medical clinic there. She was seeking to abort her child. She figured that abortion was the best option for her. She was not planning to have another baby. She was 47 years old. And so, of course, all the mantras about the health problems and the risks and, of course, the costs of an unexpected pregnancy at that stage in her life, she just wasn't ready and she wanted it all to go away. She thought that that was her choice, that abortion was the best option. Well, it didn't quite go in that direction. And how about we just let you hear from her in her own words about why she made the choice for life.
Hi, my name is Sharon. I came to the Heartbeat of Miami seeking termination because of considering my age 47. But once I got here and I took an ultrasound, I was overjoyed when I found out that I was having three baby boys. My friends are here with me. The staff here at Heartbeat of Miami was very supportive, very spiritual, and I'm very happy that I came.
You can hear the smile, can't you? I mean, I watched it on video, and you can see that on our Facebook page, for example, Life Right Now Radio on Facebook, if you want to like us there and check it out. But you can hear the smile in her voice. And if you look at their faces, her three babies. And oh, she didn't realize that she had triplets. Three little boys at 21 weeks. And when she saw the ultrasound, as you heard, she realized that they were her children. It's hard not to be touched by a picture of a baby. And a picture of your own baby? I mean, come on. Who can say no, right? And her three little boys, Dylan, Denair, and Denard, were born March 18th. They were born early, and they were born very small. They were each only a little over 2 pounds, but they were all breathing on their own, and they are doing great. She's got a full house, but it's a full house of joy. And God bless this family. God bless the Lewises. And that's not to say that their life will be easy or trouble-free. I mean, apparently she's got a pretty small apartment. And so she's reaching out to folks to help her out, hopefully find a bigger place to accommodate her new expanded family. But that's what we're here for, right? We're here to support one another as we go through life. You know, we hear a lot about unplanned pregnancy and that our parenthood needs to be planned. Well, I don't know what exactly about life is planned per se that you can stick to, that you can guarantee. I mean, my goodness, from the start to life, like all the way to the end and everything in between, seems like it could be incredibly unplanned. Or perhaps it would just be better to say that we can't always see the plan. And I think that's far more accurate, that because we can't see it, we think that it doesn't exist. Well, frankly, my dear, that's where faith comes in. We believe that all things work together for good for those who love God. Love always wins. And even if we can't see the plan, we might call something unplanned. But I think that's the farthest thing from the truth. Maybe we didn't have the plan, but God always has a plan for his children. And he has a plan for these three little boys and for their proud mama in Miami today. He has a plan for you and for me. And on that note, we're going to take one more break. But I encourage you to hang in there for the next couple of minutes. When we come back, you're going to hear in just 4 minutes what I think is the essence of God's heart for people that didn't make the choice for life. A Hollywood actor has a message that will touch your heart. And I'm going to give you a Kleenex warning right now. You don't want to miss it. Right here on Life Right Now Radio.
Hey, More than 500,000 children are currently in foster care in the United States.
Over 90% of children sold into sex trafficking in the U.S. come from foster care.
The average age for children being recruited from foster care to the sex trade is 12 years old.
These children are being sold for sex more than 10 times a day, and most of them don't live past the age of 18.
We need more foster homes. Is God calling you to help children in foster care? Open your heart. Open your hands. Open your home.
Thanks for joining us here on Life Right Now Radio. We are back one more time. By we, I mean me. Hi, Rebecca Maxwell. And I wanted to share the next 4 minutes or so of what I believe is just purely the essence of God's heart when it comes to specifically folks who have had abortions, moms and dads that are living with the pain of the past, that regret. Maybe it was just recently. Maybe it was years ago. I think sometimes we struggle with exactly what to say to that, how to speak, how to minister to people in that position. And there are a lot of us in that position now that regret our lost motherhood, our father, lost fatherhood, our lost children. And even though we say, yes, God is a God of forgiveness and love, I wonder sometimes whether or not we really believe it as a culture. We really believe it as the church. Well, you're going to hear the voice of a man that does. Actor Jim Caviezel, who is maybe a name that you don't know, but a face that you certainly would. He portrayed Jesus Christ in The Passion. And he spoke these words that you'll hear over the next 4 minutes. And I think every single person on the planet needs to hear this example of, just simply put, the good news.
Some of you have had abortions. Some men here and women are adulterers. Some have committed murder. Some of you didn't have the abortion, but you paid for it, so you have contributed to this. Many people are a part of this great sin in this country. Over 50 million in the United States alone. 45 million die every year in the world. These are all God's children, and God brings them home. Now He wants to bring you home. Now, in this moment, this is a chance for heaven right now. You don't have to wait to die to experience heaven. But when you committed the sin, any of the Ten Commandments, or the sin of abortion, or contributed to it, let me be very clear. Did you go to one of your friends and ask your friend, hear my story? And you say, yes. I went to one person. I said, why do you go to this person to confide in this sin to them? Because they didn't judge me. Because they loved me. Because I felt mercy and grace. Now, I ask you this. Do you think that your God doesn't have more mercy than your friend? Do you think your friend has more grace than God? Does your friend have more love than the Creator? It can never be. It can never be. So, God forgives you. And now He needs you to begin again. To accept forgiveness. Earlier I said, God never sends a man into hell. People choose this place. Your choice. God made you and loves you. There's never been another like you. He deemed that you would come here. He asked you, and you came. Today, You came. You had the courage to come. And there was plenty parts of the world that pulled you from today from even coming, but you came. Don't you know how much God will remember this? Do you think he is a God that's just sitting there waiting to toss you off? You are perfect. There is no one else like you. And without you, he would cry. So he's coming to you now, right now, in this moment. All he has to hear from you is yes. Yes, you've accepted Jesus, some of you. Keep accepting him. Every time we sin, we deny him. Be holy. Be perfect, just as my Father is perfect. Or in the Passion, Hosina otiabui, kuma bezrati, shamereni meresha tasher tamenu alai, bakakasaya nafshi adonai, bakakisiti, bakab takti, ba kulitekeho henkehel kosi demini, okin lakishbar, lehue di lakishbar, milatil komare hema hakihida. Hita hivu denale dena kokaver diana ahavef lakom antun. Hita hivu lakom. My commandment to you is this. You love one another just as I have loved you. And if that doesn't grab you, maybe this one will. Your name may not appear down here in this world's hall of fame. In fact, you may be so unknown that no one knows your name. The Oscars and the praise of men may never come your way, but don't forget, God has rewards that he'll hand out someday. This crowd on earth, they will soon forget when you're not at the top. They will cheer like mad until you fall, and then their praise will stop. Not God, he never does forget, and in his hall of fame, by just believing on his son, forever there's your name. I tell you, friend, I wouldn't trade my name, however small, that's written there beyond the stars in that celestial hall, for all the famous names on earth, or the glory that they share. I'd rather be an unknown here and have my name up there. God bless you.
Fantastic.
And that right there is the essence of it all, isn't it? We can talk about the issue, quote unquote, of life. But if it doesn't come from love, if our words have not love, it profit us nothing, right? It gains us nothing. We could win every legislative battle and still lose the fight where it counts. Because it's not a matter of politics, legislation. It's not a matter of looking for a consensus of scientists or experts to decree what is right and good. It's not even a matter of knowing right from wrong, because that hasn't stopped us as humanity so far from choosing poorly from sin. The only hope that we have of victory over sin and death is through he who overcame death, through the Lord of the resurrection, through a God that loved life and loved us so much that he wanted us to have life abundantly and everlasting. Despite all of our efforts to choose death, our Lord made a way for life by giving up his so that we could be restored to him. That is our hope. That is the truth that can transform a culture. And when we believe that, not only with our words, not only confessing with our mouths, but living it out with our hands, with our feet, with our lives, every day, well, that's when marvelous things happen. Thank you for joining us on this week's show. You can check us out online between now and next week at liferightnow.net and become our friend on Facebook at Life Right Now Radio. I'm Rebecca Maxwell, and I invite you to come on back at the same time, same station next week. Until then, it's time to go out and live out your pro-life right now.